Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to the Horror Hangout, a podcast where two bearded film fans watch the best and worst horror movies of all time. My name is Luke Condo with a K, and I'm joined by my regular co-host, Mr.
Ben Arrington.
How you doing?
I'm all right. How are you doing?
Yeah, not too bad. Are you, you are wearing a hat today. Good.
I'm always wearing a hat, mate. I'll go to bed with a hat on.
Do you go to bed with a hat on?
No, that'd be strange. What happened to those little sleeping caps? What are they called? Like the little...
I think we all lost them.
Yeah, everybody, what happened to them?
I don't know. Out of fashion. But like, pyjamas aren't not designed to be fashionable. Like, it's a comfort thing, isn't it? I would wear a flappy hat if it looks comfortable.
Would you wear a flappy hat in the winter time just to...
Well, if my head was cold, yeah. Actually, yeah. Being a bold man, like, you know, there's times where, because you don't want to put the covers over your face, because then you get too hot super quick because your breath is like against the covers, you know.
Oh, no.
But if you have a cap, something like a swimming cap, not a rubber, but fabric swimming cap.
Yeah, that'd be good.
The idea.
I think I've gone to sleep with like a beanie hat on before. Like, yeah, not sure necessarily on, not necessarily on purpose, but you know, when it's really cold and you wrap yourself up. And you do that thing where you get the duvet under your legs, fold it underneath.
Yeah.
Got to do that.
The problem is, you know, when you sleep with your socks on, and like, it really hurts. Like, it seems to like pull on the hairs in a weird way or something.
Yeah. I don't know. I've got to let my feet breathe, I feel like.
Do you have to let the knob and bollocks breathe? Do you sleep with your pants on?
I've got to let the knob and bollocks breathe. I think if I go to sleep wearing boxer shorts, I always wake up feeling like, oh God, someone just let them breathe.
Mate, no, I can't sleep nude. I have to have something on. I'm a never nude. Like,
you're Tobias. Never nude. you're a never nude man. You shower in a cardigan.
I shower in some cardigan pants, and then,
yeah,
I have traditional pants from. Shower to
yeah. You know. When you get from the shower, you wrap a towel around your waist and even if no one can see, you just still wrap it around your waist, do a little change, and then
just don't like being exposed like that. You never know
who's going to break in.
I
think about that sometimes. Like if someone breaks in and I'm just naked,
have you got a weapon on the bed? I mean, not that. If you got a weapon next to your bed, just in case.
No, I haven't actually. I like to think that just makes me. I think I'd seem paranoid if I had a weapon on my... But what would I go for straight away? It's a good question.
Yeah, I do worry about, like, I haven't got anything around. Like, my dad used to have, like, a baseball bat under the bed.
Yeah, baseball bat, rounders bat. I'd just come at them. These are the weapons, mate. They're licensed weapons. Yeah. These, the old mitts. The old...
they look the terrifying. Old mitts. But, I don't know. I think I should get something. I've got a sword now in the house. Maybe I should.
Wait a minute. Tell me about this.
Well, my uncle bought me a sword when I was like 10. But then they were like, you're too young to have a sword.
They locked it away until you were 30.
He kept it for a long time, and I just never sort of picked it back up. And it's it's in my house now, so maybe the sword will do. It seems a bit overkill. It seems a bit overkill.
The sword will definitely do, but they'll run a mile when they see you. Yes, coming down the stairs, fully clothed.
In their never nude pants and a sword.
Wheezing and spluttering.
I do myself a disservice for that sword. It's a cavalry sword, so it's super heavy. It's the kind of one you're supposed to ride on a horse. If I came down on a horse, it would make more sense.
Come down on Alaska's back.
Yeah. Anyway, horror movies. Have you got any news?
Got some news for you, Luke. So I don't know if you've seen this, but Universal have pulled The Hunt from release. Have you seen this? They've pulled.
Yeah.
Get your coat, you've pulled. They pulled The Hunt from release at the Blumhouse, sort of like strangers are hunted for sport by like rich liberal elites. It's been pulled. Obviously, mass shootings recently in America. I was going to say last week, but by the time this podcast goes out, it might have been a bloody another one. It seems to be so damn often. But yeah, how do you feel about that? Do you feel like it's the right time to pull it? Do you think they maybe should have delayed the...
I don't think there's any point in pulling it. I think it's not... I mean, this isn't what happened in America, is it? This isn't like... They didn't... I don't know, the film... It wasn't a load of rich white people shooting a load of poor people, was it?
No, but I think maybe it's because a guy has killed like a immigrant heavy air, killed in an immigrant heavy. This is the thing. Yeah. The problem is that a lot of stuff in America starts to blame the entertainment industry almost immediately. Obviously, we've had the old video games thing.
That's insane.
But the violent video games argument gets an HD reboot. It's just, you know what I mean? It's almost like
for so long that it's almost ludicrous now.
It is ludicrous. I mean, I've seen some memes, you know, where there's like paintings of like brutal battles like in hundreds of years ago. It's like, imagine the fucking video games these guys were playing. Must have been bloody fun. So yeah, unfortunately they blame the entertainment industry as much as possible, and never actually the fact that everyone's got access to guns. You know, you've seen pictures of people with like automatic bombs. Automatic weapons just slung over their shoulder, queuing up in Costa.
Yeah.
It's nuts. And unfortunately it looks like this film has been, I mean, maybe pull the promotion for it, maybe delay it a little bit if you feel like it's glorifying that violence. But the thing is, there are so many films that have this sort of premise. You know, where people get hunted. The Hunger Games is basically that. Battle Royale, you know, that we've seen things like this which glorify violence, but is it just a satirical thriller based on, you know, ridiculous notions and various other things other than
that? Yeah. It's I read somewhere that it's not that there's more violence in America. Like it's a similar level of violence and attacks and stuff. It's just that the violence always tends to be the percentage of people who die because of the violence, whereas we get stabbed, we can survive a lot easier than people who get shot, because there's just those are the weapons that are at hand.
Well, one of the arguments, not to make this podcast too political, because you know we've done our bit, haven't we? We've done all the political. We're doing horror films. We're talking about horror films. We're not trying to right the wrongs of the world. But we might be able to. Maybe we'll get there.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the fact that people have got access, you know, the argument we've heard is that a good guy with a gun will stop a bad guy with a gun. And that's one of the arguments for why people should have guns.
Yeah.
It ain't fucking happening. It ain't happening. No good guys are stopping the bad guys with the gun. Because even if you've got a gun and a mass shooting starts happening, you're fucking out of there.
Yeah.
People ain't John McClane. All right.
Unfortunately, no.
That's fucked. So, but blaming the entertainment industry is like, I let out such a huge sigh when I hear it, because it's a generational thing, isn't it? There's a certain generation of people who still think that violent video games are the problem. And sure, violent video games are going to have a bad effect on some people, but it's going to be such a tiny minority that what are we going to do? Like, apparently it's liberal snowflakes who can't seem to handle these things, but people are doing just fine playing Call of Duty.
Yeah, it changes all the time. It's changed our generations. So it's cinema, then it's video games, now it's the internet, Reddit or 4chan or whatever. So, I mean, it'll be VR. It'll be people like doing VR stuff, or I don't know. There'll be some other thing for the next generation. We'll be worried about people spending too much time on a Habbo hotel. What would the future equivalent of that is?
Yeah, I mean, it's everything but it's just like, maybe because all other countries have got access to the same entertainment, the same films, the same video games, but not as many people are dying in those countries. So maybe just try and look at what the common denominator is and try and work that out. But it just seems, yeah. I don't know. There's so much stuff in America where it seems like the right to bear arms, the flag and the anthem seem to take precedent over everything, over even human rights, it feels like. It's nuts, mate. And films like this, while I wasn't particularly interested in this film, because I don't really like The Purge, which I think is based, I think a lot of the same filmmaking team made it. I don't really like The Purge.
Yeah.
So I probably wouldn't be that interested in this film. Maybe I would. I didn't actually watch the trailer. But it's a shame when things get essentially pulled sort of as a knee-jerk reaction to obviously genuine tragedies. But yeah, they get pulled. And it does feel like a knee-jerk reaction. It's like, well, we've got to do something.
Well, you don't know if it's a moral thing or if it's just they think they'll lose money on it now because they just think people will go and watch it.
Yeah, but at the same time, surely this shines a light on this film and gives it more publicity than it ever would have had. The fact that, Donald Trump
pulled it.
Was tweeting about it.
Oh, okay. Oh, is that what happened?
Yeah.
He tweeted about this film.
Donald Trump tweeted about this film, but didn't actually name this film. Basically, highlighted it as being a problem, highlighted it as being racist, I think. I wonder what Donald Trump fucking watches to relax. All right, I really need to unwind now. What am I going to watch? I bet he just watches himself. I bet he just watches his own... he's got The Apprentice on loop. Oh, what a great guy.
Oh, the American one.
he's not watching Alan Sugar.
Yeah.
I bet Alan Sugar?
Yeah. Okay. Lord Sugar.
Some more news. Move on from that fairly tense scenario. Not sure if you've heard that obviously The Troop, the book Nick Carter, has been basically the rights for it have been picked up by James Wan, teaming with some guys from Channel Zero, the director from Channel Zero, E.L. Katz. So they're going to be working on that at some point soon.
I'm surprised there's not an option prior to this because that book was like massive at one point. He was on the Joe Rogan show to talk about it and stuff. And it's such a fantastic book.
Oh yeah, it was hella gruesome. It was had some parts in it where I was literally like, ow, ow.
I don't know if it'll translate. I don't know. I mean, because a lot of the horror in the book is like the sort of suggested stuff that's moving inside people's bodies.
Yeah.
I don't know how that'll translate to this. But I mean, I'll still watch it for sure.
Yeah. And then the last thing, I thought I'd mention this because this is kind of cool, but for fans of wrestling, WWE, if you've seen this, so there's a wrestler called Bray Wyatt. He's sort of been teasing this new creepy persona. Basically, his mask was designed by Tom Savini. He's got a persona called The Fiend, but he had his first match yesterday.
A different persona. It was like a childhood presenter thing.
So basically, he's like a childhood presenter. And that's kind of like his promos and stuff. But when he comes out, he's got this other persona that apparently he can't control, who's called The Fiend. And it's pretty creepy. And I thought it'd be good to mention just because obviously Tom Savini is quite a big name in the... He's a big name in the horror thing. And, you know, this guy, he wrestles in the mask as well, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I saw that image. It looked quite cool. I was like, I thought he only just unveiled this other persona thing.
He's still doing that other persona. It's kind of like a bit of both. He carried a lantern to the ring, which was like his old persona's severed head. with a massive like with a massive like lantern in the mouth.
Yeah.
And you know, WWE is supposed to be PG-13 now, supposed to be aimed at kids, and I was thinking, oh shit, my pants.
Yeah, that sounds like Attitude Era style wrestling.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. It sounds like it's like Attitude Era, and it's like genuinely quite creepy. Like the mask is genuinely quite scary.
Let's check it out.
So yeah, it's cool to see WWE doing some stuff like this, because obviously they've always had a bit of a horror element in certain characters, like obviously The Undertaker, Kane, and other guys.
Paul Bearer.
Over the years, Paul Bearer, exactly. Like genuine like horror boogeyman.
Oh, Gangrel.
Gangrel and the Brood, yeah. Exactly. So it's nice to see these characters or sort of characters taking on these horror elements as well, because they do work well. Like this is it's one of the most exciting things to see on SummerSlam last night, and it's a nice, because Bray Wyatt used to be sort of like a cult leader-esque character.
Yeah.
And the fact that they've given him something else to do when his old persona felt possibly a bit stale.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
It's cool, man. I'll check it out. Have you seen anything this week?
What have I watched? I rewatched It.
Chapter one.
Chapter one, yeah, just to get ready for a chapter two, which arrives on the September the 6th in the UK, I believe.
I think we rated that pretty highly when we watched it.
Yeah. So this is only the second time I've watched it all the way through. It's still great, you know? It's got loads of little nuanced moments that perhaps I missed the first time around. There's loads of stuff in the book that has sort of been changed a little bit, but still makes an appearance when perhaps you think that wouldn't necessarily make it to a film, but it does. In this,
yeah,
cast are great, like, and it's genuinely is creeping. The visuals, like, they do so much with Pennywise. Like, there's a particular scene where towards the end where they're all attacking him, and you sort of see all these different forms of him coming out that are all relevant to each of the Losers Club.
The only thing that's sort of been plaguing my mind about that film is like there's a bit where Eddie is sort of running away from him, and Pennywise comes out of a fridge, and it looks like he's like got him, but he's got the Eddie. He's like not doing anything, just going ooga booga booga or something.
Yeah.
And I'm like, just eat him. just eat the bloody kid.
He does that a little bit. Yeah, there's definitely a few moments of that where Pennywise sort of dials up the theater when he's sort of trying to. Some people he just like runs at them. I'm gonna have you.
Yeah.
Other times he kind of just plays, because I think. Obviously, he feeds on fear, doesn't he? So when he's doing that
to
Eddie,
they said that I don't know if this is the film or the book, but he said he fear like flavors the meat
that's
or something.
Right,
but the meat's going to get away. Like
just
if you were a proper like predator, you kill him, like you take the throat and then go for the others. If I was Pennywise, mate,
I'd suck on my inhaler and then I'd kill him. So
I'd horse.
I'd kill those kids. And also I watched High Tension for the first time, based on your recommendation.
What was it called in England? Switchblade Romance.
Switchblade Romance when it was released in the UK. Yeah. I thought it was great. It was proper gruesome, brutal. Yeah.
It starts up. That's when I was watching on the bus, and it's like the guy skull fucking them. Seven head, like right in the opening bit. Yeah, it's pretty hard going. What do you think about the big twist?
Yeah, I mean, like, I was a bit like, for briefly, and I was a bit like, but I don't think it ruined the film for me. Yeah. Like, I've read a lot of reviews and people say it's ridiculous. It kind of ruins the film. Doesn't make sense. And I'm like, I think it doesn't make sense entirely, but it doesn't ruin it. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't. Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean,
if you watch the film back, like you watch the film back knowing the twist, I don't think it's going to be that obvious.
You know what it does, though? Yeah, it does show that Alex Aja is fantastic at like creating those hardcore, brutal, nut tingling like sequences. He's so good. It do knows. I'm really excited to see Krull.
Oh yeah. And also,
yeah.
Like, I know it's in the title, but it was tense.
Yeah.
The amount of times people were like hiding somewhere, literally like.
So this thing, so I think we said about it before, it's almost a ripoff of, I mean, almost exactly a ripoff of the book Intensity by Dean Koontz. Intensity, okay. High tension. It's, and like they've never, this has never come out to light. But like the, even to the beats when she's hiding in the bedroom, she hides in certain ways behind. It's like exactly the beats of the book up until the point where there's it's not as gory as the film. And there's a bit where it splits off. I think after you go to a petrol station, it changes up, but, and the twist isn't the same, but I don't know. It feels a little bit wrong that they ripped off the book so wantonly and not sort of, I don't know if they paid Dean Koontz a bit of money for it. I don't know. They might have settled it out of.
Yeah. Sorry, mate. Ripped your book off, but this film's good. Watch it.
Yeah.
I liked it though. I thought it was good, and the killer guy was genuinely like horrible.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bit of a bastard.
Did you watch anything else?
And also, I've just been watching Glow, which has started on, which is on Netflix now, season 3. Yeah, it's great.
I've not seen it yet. Not seen it yet.
Have you not seen any of it?
No.
That's good.
I keep meaning to put it on. I was a big Alison Brie fan. You know?
Oh, yeah. She's by far and away like the best part of it. But there's loads of really good characters, loads of interesting little storylines going on. And, you know, it's over the top, it's cheesy, and it's got wrestling in it, which is nice.
Right up your street.
Right up my bloody street, mate.
I didn't get time to watch too much. I watched Synecdoche, New York again. Have you seen Synecdoche, New York?
I sure have. Only the once. And maybe I need to watch it again because I remember it is baffling, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's not for everyone, I'm pretty sure. But I don't know, man. I think this is like such an amazing film. Like it's makes me really, really. It's like a cosmic tragicomedy horror film. It's like there's so much going on. It's so insanely crafted. I don't understand how they, because the whole thing is about a guy who builds a play that resembles all of life within a warehouse, and then within that warehouse becomes another warehouse where they build the play, and the size never seems to make. It's like a Dream Logic story. It's like it's almost to say something that's like Lynchian. I think this is the perfect sort of Kaufman-esque film.
Yeah, I was just thinking of Kaufman. And do you think it's the definitive Philip Seymour Hoffman role?
I mean, he's so good in it. Yeah, he plays his character Caden Cotard, who thinks he's got every sort of illness under the sun. He doesn't understand time. That time works differently where he thinks it's been a week, it's been 10 years, and he seems to age.
Can you imagine?
But like I said, there's certain sequences in the film that I just will never ever. Some films have certain scenes that will stay with you forever. It's like in David Lynch films, there's the Mulholland Drive, the guy behind the bin. That scene will always stay with me.
Jesus, that's never explained either, is it really?
No.
It kind of just happens, and you're like.
But like you'll never forget about that, and the same that.
I always thought it was a woman. Is it a woman?
I don't think so. Well, I don't know. You see it, the creature at the end of the film. But I don't know if you see, because it's sort of moving, it's shaking about, doing a little boogie. But this film's got the perfect sort of Kaufman equivalent of that, which is when he's, so Caden hasn't seen his daughter for many, many years. And then when he finally meets her again, she's on a deathbed. She's dying. And then she forces him to admit to leaving her for his, and having anal sex with his homosexual partner, Eric, and then beg for forgiveness. And because his daughter's going to die, he has to admit to this thing that is completely not true.
Oh, no.
And then he says, and he's crying, he's saying, please forgive me for running away with my homosexual partner, Eric. And then she says, no, I can't forgive you. And then they both start crying, and then she dies. I'm like, that's such a horrifically funny, sort of twisted, very Kaufman thing to do. I don't know, man. It's just a great film. It makes me really, really sad. Makes me laugh a lot. It's one of those films where you don't quite understand it, but the more you watch it, you sort of pick out little bits and sequences, and you think that's really interesting the way he's done that. And yeah, I there's no other film like it.
So it looks like he's written a new film called Chaos Walking, with Daisy Ridley and Tom Holland coming out next year. He's listed as a writer on it, but there's four names.
Yeah,
and it says a dystopian world where there are no women and all living creatures can hear each other's thoughts in a stream of images, words, and sounds called noise.
Yeah, I don't know. But I mean, think about it. So there's Eternal Sunshine, Being John Malkovich adaptation, and this. There's a couple more: Human Nature and Confession of a Dangerous Mind. But we don't really talk about that.
He only directed Synecdoche, though, right?
Synecdoche, and I think he had a part direction in Anomalisa as well.
I've never actually seen that,
which is a big shame. But like, think he's got such a good hit record for fantastic films.
Yeah, man. Well, Eternal Sunshine's definitely up there, one of my all-time favourites.
Yeah.
Anything else? Seen anything else?
I don't think so. I don't think I'd watched anything. I was getting a bit like down about it. I felt like I hadn't seen any films. So I just cracked this one on yesterday, followed by Event Horizon.
You cracked one off and then you watched Event Horizon.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Shall I give you a little bit of bat Event Horizon?
Yes, please.
Yes, please.
Yes, please.
So Event Horizon is a 1997 science fiction horror film directed by Paul W.S. Anderson, written by Philip Eisner, stars Lawrence Fishburne, Sam Neill, Kathleen Quinlan, and Jolie Richardson. Set in 2047, follows a crew of astronauts sent on a rescue mission after a missing spaceship. The Event Horizon spontaneously appears in orbit around Neptune.
Dude, this is wasn't the most well-received film of all time. Rotten Tomatoes, 27% critic score. Audience score is 61%, so even that's not massive. IMDb, 6.7 out of 10. It's not looking good. I mean, we could be in for a shit one. But I don't know, man. I've got fond memories of this one from when I was a kid. What about you?
I don't know if I'd say fond memories, because I remember it scaring the bejesus out of me.
He was terrifying. He was absolutely terrifying, this film.
This was the film where I remember watching it. I think maybe my mum and dad rented it or got it somehow, and they were watching it, and it got to a certain point where, obviously, when things really kick off, and I had to go to bed. So I was just like,
your own volition, or did your parents?
I think I chose to, because I was like, this is terrifying.
I went to bed.
It's gone half past 10, and they're like, come on, Ben, you can watch this. Don't be a wimp. And I went, no, it's boring. It's dead boring. I hate Sam Neill. You love Jurassic Park. He was horrible. He's shitting it. Yeah. So I remember going to bed, and it took me a few years to eventually go back to it. But since then, I've probably watched it another two or three times, and now this.
So this film, I think a lot of people say, is kind of terrifying when they were kids. It's not that scary. I mean, compared to other films I've seen,
it's not that scary, and in my head, like, the gore and the blood and the guts and all the murder and everything kicking off, there's loads more of it.
Yeah, it's way more suggestive.
We get some really quick cuts of stuff where you're like, god, that looks brutal.
Yeah,
but I don't think we see enough for us to really like it. Often gets called Hellraiser in space, and I guess you can see where the connections come from. Yep. That whatever stuff I was thinking this when I was watching it, whatever stuff is there, but it's like a spaceship is kind of haunted. What was that film, Sphere? Do you remember that? There was a film called Sphere, and I think it had Dustin Hoffman, Sharon Stone, Samuel Jackson. Now I can't remember if just in my head that and this have kind of like gone. If you look at the poster, and it came out in 98. If you look at the poster, it looks kind of like the same film, but these two films are kind of like...
Yeah, I don't know about... I don't know, I don't recognise the... I can say... So it's not... It's, the thing is, it's like sort of an alien film, but it's not at all. Like, it's alien in a cosmic horror alien sense, where it's like...
Yeah.
It could be anything. But, yeah, I don't know, that's a different, interesting one. Is there any other films quite like this?
Hellacious. I was thinking maybe like Sunshine a little bit, but that's obviously less hellacious, more like subjective in terms of I guess obviously it's similar to Alien in certain ways without there actually being an alien. you know, that sort of sense of
this has
being
got
trapped.
More, it's got the proper Christian haunting, Christian ghost story type thing going on. Do you know what I mean? Rather than the organic alien creatures thing going on.
Yeah. And I guess it reminds me a bit of Dead Space as well. Again, even though there's not creatures in it so much, it's more like the
Dead Space is a scary one.
Desperation. It's more like the desperation of trying to get away. Because, you know, I mean, it is pretty scary when you think about it. Like, you can't. The only way to get away from someone in space is like you're pretty much screwed in that so many different ways. And it's that claustrophobia and that sense of, you know, complete helplessness, which I think lends to it.
Yeah.
And is this the only film directed by Paul W.S. Anderson which is any good in any way? So I'm not saying this film's great.
Jesus, harsh. what about the babysitter? That was all right. Was that him?
I've not seen that.
It's quite good. It was on Netflix last year, I think.
Is that him? the babysitter, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, was he involved?
I've got Google. I'm pretty sure it was Paul W. Sanderson. No,
Paul W.
No, it wasn't. Ignore me. That was McG.
Jesus. Oh, McG. Oh, yeah. God, yeah. So obviously he did Alien vs. Predator, Mortal Kombat, Soldier with Jean-Claude Van Damme. And he did all the Resident Evil films, which are utter tosh.
So what did McG do? Because I thought he was the guy who did the Resident Evil films.
Oh, no. McG, did he not do he did a Mission Impossible, I think.
Yeah, by the way, Paul Lewis Anderson is from Newcastle upon Tyne in the United Kingdom.
Well, there we go. Should we find him? So yeah. McG did Terminator Salvation, Charlie's Angels, This Means War, Babysitter.
Mate, this guy did Mortal Kombat. So I don't know what we're complaining about. He's nailed it.
He's absolutely nailed it. So I mean, this film is an original property. It's based on a book, right?
I think it's an original property.
It's an original property. So, I mean, for that alone, it's pretty good.
I think the problem is this film, it does suffer from the sort of the effects. We're probably at a point where we watch them now, like the digital effects and the space and the costumes and the set design, it's all a little bit cookie cutter. Doesn't feel very fresh. There is a couple of visual aspects which are really good. The puzzle box design thing, the whatever you call that, the spinning interlocking gateway portal. That's a really cool design. And also there's the meat grinder tunnel thing that doesn't really make much sense.
Terrific. Why does it need to be like that?
It's like a walkway into hell. It's
there's some hammy acting in this as well. There are some moments where people literally just go, no!
Sam Neill and Lawrence Fishburne are doing a deep bellow off at some point. Because they both go, no! They both do it like several times. Sam Neill does the one, I think he does it in Jurassic Park as well. He's great at it. I think Sam Neill, by the way, after I watched this, was like, I really like Sam Neill. He's like, he's got the sort of cheekiness to pull off the sort of slightly stupid stuff. But he doesn't mind acting like a bit of a prat. But he also got a bit of a regality to him.
I like Lawrence Fishburne as well, but I don't think he gets used. He gets underutilized in this. He's a bit one-dimensional. And I feel like the same can be said about pretty much the rest of the crew. Because you've got Sean Pertwee and then Jason, is it Jason Isaacs?
Yeah.
Who are the same person. I kept forgetting that there were two different actors. I kept thinking, oh, that's that guy. Oh, no, wait, there's that guy as well.
Yeah, Jason Isaacs looks very different here as well. His head's like half the size that it is now. His head's swollen in the past 10 years.
I don't really rate Jolie Richardson. I don't know if I've ever seen her in any of it. What happened to her as well? She used to be in loads of stuff, right? I'm sure she's still in some stuff, but she's been in quite a lot constantly. But at the same point, like there was a particular time where she was in everything, right? Like Under One Dalmatians, this, something else. She's kind of naff. you know what I mean? Like, again,
very naff, yeah.
In a science fiction film like this, you always seem to have like a strong female character because a lot of times they're trying to replicate Alien and trying to replicate Ellen Ripley.
They were like, but, let's get away from the alien thing. Let's have a weak female character.
Let's have two weak female characters. One who's like obsessed with her kid and thinks her kid's on this spaceship, even though he obviously isn't. And the other one who just kind of don't really do anything.
They've got a guy at all. Who I was like, is that Lee Evans? Do you know what I mean?
I know what you mean, but like, can you imagine? I know he was in like.
It even sounds like Lee Evans putting an American accent on. I'm like, he's got. Tell me a few looks to verify that it definitely wasn't.
He's like, you just think everyone's British comedians. You just go, is that Lenny Henry? Is that Lee Evans? Is that Lenny Henry?
Oh,
is that Roy Chubby Brown in the main role? Jesus. Yeah.
Who else? Yeah. So Richard T. Jones. It's quite a big crew. I think they could have done with getting rid of a few characters and combining a lot of them. So Sam.
Yeah. Leo Richard T. Jones. He's got the quips. He's got the one-liners. He's got the
J of the.
I'm coming for you, motherfuckers. That kind of shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's dialing up. He's dialing up the one-liners as often as possible.
Sam Neill plays a evil doctor.
Yeah, but he's not evil, is he?
Well, corrupted by corrupted doctor. Lawrence Fishburne plays standard captain.
Captain yeah, standard. I kept thinking, because I watched the Matrix trilogy recently. The amount of times I've heard Lawrence Fishburne say something and say, my ship on the end. Somebody get me my ship. Get off my ship. What's happened to my ship? This is my ship. I just think, You better have a boat or a ship in real life.
You typecast as someone with a ship as a captain, yeah.
Yeah. Lawrence, have you got a boat? Yeah, I have actually. How do you know? You'd be perfect for
the
captain
lists
in this.
All the time.
In this. Yeah, fine.
So Kathleen Quinlan, who I didn't recognise too much, plays med tech, plays a doctor who lost a son at some point. Got bad legs or something, I don't know.
He lost him. He ain't here, is he, on the ship? Stop thinking it. God damn it.
She lost him in a large supermarket, in a large Tesco somewhere. Jack Noseworthy is the Lee Evans of the group, who doesn't do too much. He's sort of the child.
What's his surname?
And it suits him as well, really, when you look at his nose. I mean, nominative determinism, for sure. Like, he grew into that.
And I get confused by his name in this, because they call him Justin, right?
And Baby Bear.
But then
Baby
after
Bear.
A while, I'm Baby Bear. But after a while, I realise that's his surname. Because at one point they go, Captain Mr. Justin, Mr. Justin. And I'm like,
maybe he's only got one name, like Seal or Cher. Jack Noseworthy is like a detective name. P.I.
Is his nose worthy? My nose is worthy. I'll sniff out a clue. All right.
I love that in Nice Guys. The thing that Ryan Gosling is his private investigator. He's got no sense of smell.
No sense of smell.
Jack. Jason Isaacs plays medicine man.
Already I'm bored of you reading off all the characters.
Yeah.
There's too fucking
one
many.
One more. Sean Pertwee plays Sean Pertwee. He plays the tech guy, the engineer.
Their ship is called the Lewis and Clark.
I was like, is that a supermarket? That sounds is that like Marks and Sparks? I'm sure it's like a shoe company or something.
Take off the Lewis and Clark. Oh, it's been spot. It's one of those ships. It's been sponsored by.
Is it
Lewis
and Clark or Lewis?
Lewis and Clark.
Lewis and Clark. Oh, no, they are.
So it's like when football stadiums get sponsored by something like the Sports Direct Arena. Yeah. And
yeah. Well, it's like Weyland-Yutani. They were like, yeah, let's make it seem global. So it's like the Japanese and the American name come together. Well, just like two English chaps, Lewis and Clark.
I'm Lewis, I'm Clark. This is our spaceship, top quality. Got a bloke called Noseworthy.
Sean! by the way, in fact, this isn't a quiz.
Hit me with a quiz early on, I'm not ready.
No, it's not getting the quiz. This whole film was produced in England, so it's all English people, English production company, all made in England. That's why it's...
So good.
Englishy. Okay,
to see I see cups of tea in the background all the time. Yep.
Someone's wearing Clark's shoes. I noticed that. Did you see that? Yeah, Lee Evans is in the role as the Jack Knows
Lee Evans
character.
Lee Evans is in the lead role.
Okay. Yeah. So the film opens. It's like 2013. Something happened. I can't remember what. 2015.
They say 2015. There's a colony on the moon.
Yeah. I'm like, bloody hell. Okay. 2020.
20.
On Mars. Fuck.
2020. We're on Mars. Shit. How did we get here?
It's doing that writing on the screen. It goes. Yeah, text doesn't awesome. Do that on any screen anywhere. That's good. So there's a ship called Event Horizon. It went missing at some point near Neptune, and then 24/7 they get a distress signal. Our crew on the Lewis and Clark has to find it. I think we get a pretty standard. Oh no, it opens with a thingy, Sam Neill screaming.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Right.
Oh!
So he's, I think he wakes up. I think so, yeah. I think he just looks, he looks out his space window. He's on like the Russian space station or something. And he just bellows out the window.
He's had a wet dream. He goes, no!
He'd make a great opera singer, I think. Good, is that tenor? I mean, tenor, 20. Who knows?
Tenor, 20. So yeah, this rescue vessel, Lewis and Clark, gets dispatched. And that's where we get all these characters, love and life. Lawrence Fishburne sits in like a weird chair that like hangs from the ceiling.
Yeah.
And then we find out obviously why Sam Neill, his character, Billy Weir, the doctor, has gone along. And the reason he's gone along is because he designed the Event Horizon, which is basically a ship which can pass through like artificial black holes. It makes artificial black holes, passes through them, so it can bridge two points in space-time. How many times have we seen this in films where someone's describing something spacey and they go, here's point A, here's point B, how'd you get there really fast? Fold it in half, go twice. Straight through the middle.
I've been twice.
I've seen it in that.
Interstellar.
Yeah, and all the other films. It's in all the other films. It's in Talladega Nights.
Talladega Nights. Eraserhead.
Yeah, it's in all of her films. Yeah. So he basically explains that. And there's classic moments, you know, where he's telling the crew, even though all the crew are like astronauts, they're astronauts. Yeah. They go, can you explain it in layman terms? And he starts explaining it, and they go, can you explain it in English?
He goes, how do you want me to, fuck layman's terms. Do you speak English?
Yeah.
I was like, oh, God,
how much clearer can you be? Like, I understood. I'm not an astronaut. How much clearer can you be? Oh, you go through one place and you end up somewhere else really far away, but really quickly. Yeah. Oh, right. Okay, I understood that.
And then, like, jump on the table and start, licking the paper and getting the. But Sam Neill has to explain it.
To be fair, who can you rely on in this crew? I feel like everyone's kind of a bit of a liability. Actually, you can rely on Sean Pertwee's character because he does a good bit of fixing, doesn't he?
What does he do? What does he fix?
He fixes the ship later on. It gets a big hole in it, and he kind of like fixes it.
It's like the hull's breached, and he patches it up. Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone else is kind of like just some form of liability.
Yeah, I think Lee Evans gets a hard one because he wasn't expecting to. People are,
people are going to be listening to this podcast and they're going to be thinking,
it's actually Lee Evans.
Lee Evans in there. Yeah. He should.
And they're watching and go, oh yeah, it is.
And then we get another sort of classic cliche moment where we listen back to the distress signal.
Yeah.
Which is basically the crew of Event Horizon who would listen to this distress signal and say, right, let's go there straight away? The distress signal is like,
it's like,
it's just loads of stuff like that, and they go,
that's a Tasmanian devil.
And then obviously one of them speaks Latin, obviously, because if you're an astronaut you got to speak Latin, and he goes, oh, play that bit back. And then someone just goes,
ah,
starts
talking to it,
and he realizes and he thinks it says liberates me. I think I could wear that out, even if I don't speak.
If it depends how much pressure was on me. Game show situation, I'd never get it. But
I'd say liberate myself. I don't know.
Well, that's probably it, isn't it? Okay, yeah. So they go into stasis. I think Sam Neill's already having like some dreams while he's in stasis. There's a creepy bit when he sees his wife. She's like saying, come to me. And then she's missing her eyes.
So I think we get a bit of backstory where it looks like his wife killed herself, slit her wrist in the bath. And now her soul in some way, probably because of this ship, because this ship's fucking messed up. It's kind of haunting him.
Yeah.
I thought this stasis looked horrible, like in the water. I'd be worried that like you go in there, and exactly what happened, like, I don't know, like the pipe split or something, and you'd be like, you just wake up.
It doesn't know how long, because they're going to Neptune, aren't they?
It says they're in there for 56 days, and the first thing I thought was, you know how wrinkly your hands get when you're in the bath for like 45 minutes?
Yeah. I fell asleep in the bath the other day. Thought my hands were going to fall off.
Imagine that for 56 days. Yeah. You'd come out as a prune man. Right? Like they come out of stasis, and one of the first things Cooper says is, you want some coffee? Oh, fucking, that's the last thing I'll be thinking. I've got to remember how to use my legs.
That's true. Maybe, I mean, who knows the technology? I mean, it's all kind of made up. But and it's kind of green, so maybe there's something special in there. Matcha tea, whatever they put in there to keep people fresh.
Green tea?
Yeah.
To keep people fresh, make sure they don't go off.
Yeah, it's a bit of mint. It's like it's Crest toothpaste. They pop in there, and it's everyone's fine. It looks a bit like mouthwash, actually. But anyway, so they get there. 56 days later, they get out. Well, he has a jump scare moment, and she's like, "Come to me!" Like her face is suddenly his face, and then he wakes up. You know what I mean? There's a few jump scares in this bit in this film. But I was like, "Oh yeah, there's might a be few." Liking that.
Well, you know, as I said, time and a place. But yeah, I was a bit like, "Yeah,
yeah,
yeah,
yeah." Okay, so then they get out and they fly down to the Event Horizon. They latch on clumsily. Sean Pertwee's like, yeah, fuck this, just latched out to that. Bibbidi bobbidi bob.
He's a care disease. I don't reckon he's an astronaut. I reckon he's just some bloke.
He is
some bloke from down a pub that they found.
Yeah. Yeah, the old cockle in hell. And even Freudian slip. So then they... I don't know what happens now.
They go on the ship. They find it's pretty much like deserted. But then one of the characters, the lady, Peters, she finds like a body that's been proper messed up. And they say something really stupid in this. They like go, oh, he's been messed up.
Yeah.
And they go, looks like some kind of animal did that.
Yeah. There's a bit where there's a dummy jump scare.
Oh, shit.
Where a hand, like a floating hand.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Floating glove.
And then what's his name said? The black guy goes, Looks like Skipper got a case of the willies. And I was like, it'd be better if there's like a like a penis floating past his face.
A severed penis. Looks like you got a case of the willies and here's a floating penis. Yeah, and then there is a jump scare of that body, kind of like you see it in the background, floating behind Peter's, and then it's
so goes, there's a little bit of blood here, and there's like a lightning flash, and there's like blood caked all the walls. Also, there's a CD-ROM in it with the captain's logs on it.
She struggles to get it out.
Yeah,
and I thought classic CD-ROM.
Yeah,
got to come out of the slot. So yeah, obviously we see blood and guts and things hanging on the wall. That's pretty good. That's really good.
Yeah.
Pretty gruesome. So they get the captain's log, classic. But then what happens? I think they get the gravity activated, right?
They sort of manage to get. Oh yeah. What happens to this ship? Oh yeah. So whilst they're looking in this thing, the Lee Evans guy gets sucked. For some reason, the Event Horizon turns on. The engine turns on, and he gets sucked inside this black, like a Stargate, like a black Stargate.
Yeah. Which obviously, when you see one of those things, always put your hand.
Always put your hand right in there. Straight away. Don't even think
about it. Oh, that's nice.
Pop it in.
So we get sucked off into there.
You know when you put your finger in a bottle and it gets stuck? You're like, oh, shit. It's like, is that same kind, almost as bad as that feeling.
Yeah. Or you try a ring on.
Yeah. You're like, this is me now. This is who I am.
This is me now. God.
I remember we were on the holiday once and this girl, she had like a ring. I don't know why we were trying it on. And we were sitting on this balcony. And I tried it on. I couldn't get it on. I panicked. And it popped off. And it went flying over the balcony. Into these like hedges somewhere. Like my husband. I don't think I've ever felt that bad in my life.
What did you do?
We all kind of just watched it go over the balcony. Fly off.
And you just went... Oh,
I'm so sorry.
That's a shit. Did you get it or not?
No, I was searching for it. Went down to the garden thing to look for it for hours, but it's gone.
Hours?
She said it was like a sister's or something. It was horrendous.
It's like a little rat with it on it stuck on its head.
I am the king rat now. Yeah.
The king of the rat. Cheers, Luke.
I just remember. I just remember that feeling of it just becoming loose and just flying off, and just seeing it.
try this on, Luke. Yeah. You idiot.
Yeah. Okay. Anyway, so he gets sucked into the portal. At this point, there's like a shockwave in it. It blasts everyone through. I don't like these things in space movies when it's like there seems to be fireworks stuck inside every control panel. So when the shockwave goes through, everything just like sparks. And Sam Neill, what's his name? Lawrence Fishburne goes. Flying across into a...
Oh!
That is what he does.
And
the ship, it breaks the ship. Yeah.
Lewis and Clark, the ship, gets broken, and then Cooper comes in and goes and saves Lee Evans, and he emerges, and he's like, he looks like he's enduring the worst hangover of his life.
Yeah.
He's just like in a catatonic state. Who knows what he saw in that portal?
Yeah.
Probably loads of stuff. People doing it. There was names. Who's to know? So he's terrified based on what he saw. And then there's some bits where he's like in a med bay. And so basically everyone comes aboard the Event Horizon because
it's not
safe to be on Lewis and Clark because it's screwed. Sean Pertwee's kind of trying to fix the massive split in the hull. But yeah, and then various members of the team start experiencing like... different apparitions and having different, what word am I thinking?
Everyone's getting sort of
hallucinations.
Yeah.
Yeah, everyone's getting hallucinated. Getting the living bejesus hallucinated out of them.
Yeah.
Peter's is seeing like her son. She thinks he's like led down in one of the med bays at one point. There's plenty of this as well, you know, when people are getting haunted or seeing scary shit. One of the other crew just comes up to him and goes, "Hey! Ah!"
Yeah.
Who greets people like that in any way?
Yeah. I like some... I think the stuff that scared me when I was a kid was all the Sam Neill stuff. When he's like seeing his wife and... I don't know why, but now when I watch it now, it's like it's almost like the tamest part of it. The actual scary stuff is when they look at the footage, they manage to de-scramble it and they're all looking at the log footage. I don't know if that's probably a little bit later on.
I think it's not long after this. I think
Basically
it's just like loads of people mutilating each other and horrible shit happening.
Okay. And it's like looking at a Clive Barker film or a Bosch painting or something like that. It's like looking into hell. It's crazy.
Yeah. And then obviously they realize that it's not liberate me, it's save yourself from hell, apparently.
I think instantly Lawrence is like, we're going.
Yeah, we better leave now.
Yeah.
It's pretty messed up. But I'm not sure how they work it out. I think maybe Weir is the one who kind of works it out. He kind of like takes a turn pretty quickly, right? He seems all right one minute, and then he kind of like just goes, I'm going to fuck you all up now.
Yeah, so when does he... Liam's character has a moment where he's like, I'm going to kill myself. He wakes up and he's like, I've seen some crazy shit. We'll never know what I've seen. And he tries to blow himself out of the air. Like Lawrence Fishburne has a heroic moment. He kind of...
Basically just does that whenever he's floating backwards.
That's how
forwards.
He moves. Like that's how that's how his suit is operated.
Oh! That's how he drives down the road.
Different pitches of... Well, it's the same pitch, isn't it? Different...
Yeah. So basically he tells Lee Evans' character to close his eyes, blow all the air out of his lungs...
Yeah,
and that's quite cool because he floats out into the thing.
Yeah, but he's doing it a little bit too well. Like he's got magnetic boots. It all looks a little bit too easy to be jumping around out there.
Yeah.
So he saves him, but this is like this bit where he's like he's screaming and his eyes are bleeding and a lot of bleeding eyes in this.
He does. He survives though.
Yeah, he does all right.
Yeah, which is.
I mean, he's probably emotionally scarred for life.
Well, he's pretty messed up, I think. He won't ever see it again. So basically, Weir kind of explains that you like the ship's gravity drive opened a gateway to a dimension outside the known universe.
Yeah.
And the event horizon has somehow attained sentience. Is that what you believe is happening here? Or were you believing like somehow like hell has possessed it? Or there are ghosts on board now?
So I see it as... some sort of otherworldly life force that we just don't understand is sort of living within in the ship, but I don't see it as ghosts as we know. I kind of feel like it's more outside our understanding than ghosts and spirits and that kind of thing in hell. I mean, that's just like us trying to make sense of it.
Yeah,
but
because in that case, were we made to think that Weir has been like possessed by something or that. Something to do with just like because it can't be the actual soul of his wife, so it's almost like it latches onto your fears and your.
I think there's that. I think it takes
your sins.
Yeah, it takes it from your mind and sort of twists you to. But I mean, it's got weird powers because at one point it Weir gets chucked out of the window and then he's back in with a fresh pair of eyes.
Yeah, so he cuts his eyes out at one point.
Maybe he's not actually back in. Yeah.
Maybe it's not actually him anymore. Maybe Weir is gone, and this is just again the ship presenting itself.
What do you think about that bit where Weir gouges his eyes out? Do you like it?
It's all right, isn't it? I mean, it's a bit. I'm like, if anything, don't gouge your eyes out if you've got like a master plan to sort out, because you'd be fumbling about
like,
everywhere.
You won't need eyes.
You don't need eyes
to see
Back to the Future.
What we're going to look at.
Yeah. And then Miller basically decides we're going to destroy the event horizon. There's going to be evacuation. And while they're sort of going about their business to prep for the evacuation, Peters dies. She sees like a hallucination of her son.
Yeah.
And he leads her all the way up the top of a ladder. And then she does that stupid thing where she just steps into a gap and falls to her death. Yeah. You'd look where you're going, wouldn't you? You'd always look where you're going.
Yeah, especially if you don't know where you are. Yeah.
But... Yeah, you're not just gonna... I always thought that in Home Alone too, when Marv opens the door and says, Harry, I've reached the top. There's a massive hole there. It's just like, you're going to look,
like
you're going to see that.
If you even like, staring up, you can still kind of see the gaping hole.
Harry, I've reached the top. And you fall straight down. I think it's your own fault, Marv.
Yeah.
If you're not going to... If you've got no spatial awareness, you only got yourself to blame.
I mean, maybe he has got no spatial awareness. Maybe we're bullying,
Yeah, he is a criminal, though, so...
Oh, yeah, okay.
Slate.
Yeah, okay. So, I think Theo goes on a bit of a killing spree around here, right? So he blows up, he uses the bombs to blow up the Lois and Clark.
Yeah.
Which and he blows up Sean Pertwee.
Sean Pertwee's dead. And then Cooper is like floating in the space on a piece of the ship.
But like, he's not even like just outside. He's completely in space.
Yeah.
There's no coming back from that. Like, no. You would burn up on re-entry at that distance.
But he manages to use the air from his
single
suit,
gas tank.
Single gas tank.
One gas tank to get back to like wherever those guys are. Yeah, it's
and when he's flying back, he says, "Here I come, motherfucker!" So I'm like, I would not be that chirpy. No. I'd be utterly terrified.
There's a good chance you're going to die out there, mate. So how is he supposed to... like? So he's looking at the planet. At that point, Neptune is about the size of a beach ball. How the hell is he supposed to navigate himself back towards exactly where he's come from? I don't know.
Who knows, mate? Maybe they should have had you on board as the sure space dude. So Jason Isaacs gets killed by Weir. He vivisects him, basically just like splits him open, hangs him from some hooks.
Yeah.
Which is pretty brutal. And then Miller and Weir have a bit of a showdown in front of the big spinny gravity pulling thing. There's a bit where Weir like jumps through a door as it's closing. Yeah. Miller jumps through a door as it's closing like this. And it's horrific. It's got horrible spikes on each side.
It's like a death machine. Why is it so spiky?
Why is it so spiky? It's like something. It is like something out of Hellraiser.
Yeah.
It looks like it's not like if I was designing that ship, you'd be like
cushions. Just put cushions everywhere.
Yeah. Does this bit have to have like loads of death spikes in it? Well, yeah.
Put some rubber tip, like baby protector type things. Can we not childproof this room, please?
There's massive spikes in the side of the room as well. People get them thrown against the wall. And I'm how has no one been? I kept thinking someone's going to get impaled on one of those spikes soon.
Yeah.
But it never actually happened.
I thought, what's her name? When she fell off the thing, Peters, I thought she was going to get impaled. Did you see her legs, though? Her legs got proper mangled up. I don't know if it's
When she fell, she falls down like a sort of chute, and that looked pretty horrible because she was like bouncing off all the sides.
Yeah, yeah. I think he kills. I can't remember actually what he does now. He gets a bit of a killing spree, but I think he gets in a bit of a scrap with what's his name, and then he gets shot out the airlock.
There's a bit of a scrap with Miller, and then obviously at this point, Weir is like bold. All his air is gone. He's
got loads of
cuts, various different satanic symbols on his face. Is he naked?
I think so.
I thought he was naked, but then at one point I looked, and it looked like he was wearing some sort of nappy.
He's an ever nude. He's an ever nude.
He's an ever nude. Maybe he's just wearing like nude colored pants.
Yeah. Well,
maybe,
I don't know.
Maybe you should do that.
Yeah. Who says I don't do that? But then he gets blown out of the airlock, and then he's suddenly back in the room, in the Event Horizon room, with a fresh pair of eyes. They look really blue. That's right. I don't know if they're meant to be different eyes. I don't know. Or if he's even there at all. Maybe it's just a projection.
Yeah. And then he shows Miller basically what hell is. Like, you can't even begin to.
Yeah.
And he shows it, and there's loads of obviously really quick visuals of all the crew basically just dead, torn apart. We haven't even mentioned Jolie Richardson for ages. She literally does nothing.
I don't think she did anything.
She didn't do anything. There's a bit where there's a water tank and it fills with blood, and then erupts, and all the water kind of like soaks her. But that's kind of it. There's a lot of her like staring at things, but she doesn't actually do anything. I don't think she does anything helpful at any point.
No. But Cooper...
and her name's Stark as well.
Tony Stark.
Her name's Tony Stark.
Her name's Tony Stark. That's interesting.
Miller basically detonates some explosives, sacrificing himself. He explodes him. He goes, "Oh yeah!"
He explodes. Oh! Yeah.
He sacrifices himself, and then the gravity drive activates the ship. A part of the ship gets like sucked into the black hole, and then the bit with everybody else on it, so like Stark, Cooper, and Justin, It's weird that these are the three survivors: Stark, Cooper, and Justin.
Why is because it weird?
Well, because Stark was like, sorry, Stark basically does nothing all the way through. So why does she survive?
Yeah.
Cooper and Justin at two moments in the film, they're like, we're dead.
Yeah, I don't
there's
think
no
they,
way they're not dead.
There's no reason to keep Cooper in the film at all at that point. He should have floated off to space. That would have been a good way to kill someone.
Yeah, if he was like, God damn, I got myself into this shit.
And he's just floating off and we'll just never see him again.
That's it.
Justin, Lee Evans, I mean, he took all his torment and became a world-famous stand-up comedian when he got back to Earth.
How many carrier bags can you hold in each hand?
Yeah.
That's what he's thinking.
And then, what's the name? Jolie Stark. She's just there for that final scare. There's like one final scare where it looks like Thingy's face, the rescue party's face.
Yeah, yeah. It's a bit lame, isn't it? So it's 72 days later. Event Horizon's boarded by a rescue party. They got the word rescue across their face, or was it across their chest? Just in case you didn't know. What are you going down to that ship for? Just rescue. Put the rescue helmet on then. Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Discovers the remaining crew. Jolie Richardson obviously comes out, and there's a jump scare where she sees Weir as one of the rescue guys.
If I see Samuel's face, I'm instantly going to freak out.
But then, obviously, it was just a jump scare, and then she wakes up for real, and everyone's all right, and they have actually been rescued. And
it's a bit of a lame minute. They could have done something better there. What if they actually went into the thing and they were actually in hell or something? I don't know. That would have made more sense to me.
It's kind of a nothing ending, isn't it?
Is Miller in hell then?
Well, I thought Miller was dead because he exploded the ship. Well, he probably is in hell, yeah, actually. Good point.
Yeah.
He's just chilling in hell.
Just chilling. Okay, living his days out in hell. I've got some trivia.
Oh, yeah?
Nah, this one should be easy for you. It is easy for anyone really who did GCSE science. What is an event horizon?
Let's see. Is it something that happens in space? what is an event horizon? Some sort of thing that happens on the horizon. I don't know. I feel like it's going to be. Is it fairly straightforward or not?
Well, you could say it's the theoretical boundary surrounding a black hole within which gravitational attraction is so great that nothing, not even radiation, can escape because the escape velocity is greater than the speed of light. Technically, it's where the physical universe ends and physical laws no longer apply.
That was what I was going to say.
Yeah, I thought it was.
Before you rudely interrupted me.
The only way I can think about it is, you know, in Interstellar, when he goes into the black hole, I kind of feel like, is that the event horizon, right? When he goes into past the horizon into the thing.
I guess so. Yeah, that's
But that you got sense. It right. Yeah. Okay, number two. Yeah. Which single shot in this film, which one single shot, took 10 weeks worth of digital effects wizardry to put together? 10 weeks went on one single shot. Which shot?
10 weeks digital effects wizardry. Yeah. Was it like the bits the gravity stuff floating, anti-gravity stuff floating around?
Well, okay, so it says it's a shot where Sam Neill stares out of a window, which then pulls back to reveals on a spaceship orbiting Earth. But that sort of is in that scene, so I don't know if they meant that as part of this as well. It doesn't say so. It just says the
just lazy the special
well,
effects.
Scrap on, just scrap it, yeah. So he says
they're just crap, aren't they?
just lazy, really lazy union workers. Anyway, the shot where Sam Neill stares out of a window, which then pulls back to reveal he's on the deck of a spaceship orbiting Earth, took the digital special effects house CineSite 10 year olds weeks to achieve. Yeah, the shot lasts for 45 seconds. Okay, number three. Was Dr. Weir named because he wears the bed? Because he wears his clothes really well? Or was he named after the Dutch physician, occultist, and demonologist Johan Weir? Which one was it?
Well, I mean, they all sound like they could be correct, but I'll go for the third one.
It was because he wears his clothes really well.
Does he? He's naked at one point.
Exactly.
It's because he wears his clothes really weird.
Yep. So, number four.
He's a weirdo.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so named after the Dutch physician, occultist, and demonologist Johan Weir. Number four. What film did Paul Anderson turn down to make this one? What film did he turn down to make this?
Give me a clue. You bastard. Is it a big film?
I can't give you any more than that.
X-Men.
It. Yeah. So the 2000 film X-Men.
He turned down X-Men.
He turned down X-Men to make
Jesus,
this.
What an idiot.
It's probably a good thing because, I mean, would superhero movies be where they are today if
just
Paul
imagine,
Anderson
like,
made X-Men?
A parallel universe where that happened.
I think
he made X-Men.
I think the Marvel universe. I don't think any superhero movies would be where they are today because they'd all be like Resident Evil, Apocalypse.
Who would have been Wolverine? Lee Evans.
he could do any character, that guy. That's quite good. That's quite good. But yeah, so I'm glad he didn't get to make it. Number five, from green light to completion, how long did this film production take? Was it A, 10 months, B, 20 months, or C, it's still not actually finished and it's still being worked on today?
The deadline for that Event Horizon over 20 years ago now. What are you thinking? Well, we've got this visual effects shot that we've been trying to do.
Cinesite 10. Taking the fucking time.
Was it 10 months?
It was 10 months, yeah. Super quick production, really. From green light to completion. 10 months.
Just give me the green light!
Which I think is why some of the set decor and the aesthetic design stuff isn't quite polished. Like, there's some stuff's great, but there's a lot of like cookie cutter stuff.
It's fucking shit, mate. That's what you're saying, isn't it?
I just feel like it wasn't quite boiled to completion. Hang on
a minute.
It wasn't quite cooked through. Do you know what I mean? It wasn't piping hot. You know, you have a microwave lasagna. You need to make sure it's piping hot in the middle. If you take it out too soon, it's icy cold in the middle. Some of this film is icy cold.
What? Not lukewarm. How do you feel when people say lukewarm? Do you feel like that's my name?
Lukewarm in it. I don't know. I don't really care.
It's like really just, about it. It's like if there was a thing called Ben Warm.
Ben Warm. Secret agent. Ben Warm.
Ben Warm and Luke freezing cold.
Ben Warm kind of makes sense. Ben's a warm name. Luke Warm. Luke isn't a warm name. It's like it's too biblical.
Luke. Yeah, pretty biblical. Is Ben biblical? Benjamin, yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Benjamin biblical. Yeah.
Bloody biblicals.
Okay, I need to rate the film.
Yeah, I mean, I've got fairly fond memories of it, but I feel like in this watch, it didn't hold up so great. I feel like a lot of it was kind of a bit shit. Too many characters. It wasn't as scary as I remember. A lot of the horrible visuals, like, they happened quickly, so, yeah. I'd give it a C+.
Nice, yeah.
But it's got some nice moments. Some of the visuals are all right, I suppose. Yeah. And as a sort of, I quite like spacey horror stuff. So,
yeah.
Like, do you know sometimes when like a certain setting of a film like just improves it that much for you, like you enjoy watching it because you find it pretty creepy. And it reminded me of things I like Dead Space and other things.
Yeah, I think it deserves like a decent score just because the idea is pretty solid. Like, I mean, how is it in space? I don't think you say like haunted thing in space. I don't think it's been done really quite like this. It's good, but I mean, it's still a bit of a naff. It's got a lot of naffness to it. I'm going to give it a C. It's a straight C.
Well, so apparently it's going to be a TV show, so which we discussed last week.
Yeah,
that could be interesting. It'd be nice to see like a little mini series.
Yeah.
Set on a. You know, on a ship. Or maybe like a ship goes into hell. Or
yeah, I think it should go into hell.
You know, and
they're
trying to, into hell and trying to navigate itself back out. You know, that'd be pretty cool.
Yeah.
So you agree, mate?
So, yeah, there's a bit in Interstellar where he goes into Event Horizon. I think we just mentioned it, actually. But that's my favourite bit about Interstellar, because it's at that point, it's like all boundaries of what we know are off. Like, we have no idea what's going to happen now. Like, it's just, it's insane from here on out.
Yeah.
It needs to do that. It needs to push us past that of what we know and get crazy. I think it'd be
crazy.
Good. It'd be good. Adam Wingard, he did Your Next and Death Note, which I didn't watch. Did The Guest.
No, me neither.
Dan Stevens, The Guest. That
was
quite good.
Oh, yeah. Guest was alright, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah. Come on.
So, we've still kind of got we need a film really for next week, which I don't think we decided upon yet, because Crawl and Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark are out on the same day, 23rd of August. So, we need to watch them next week. Any ideas?
I don't know. Halloween 3? Is there anything new out on Netflix or anything?
Maybe. We'll decide on something. We'll find someone, mate, innit?
Yeah. Cool. All right,
yeah.
All right, okay. Yeah. Cool, man. This show is brought to you by Hawk and Cleaver. Head over to hawkandcleaver.com. Become a patron over at patreon.com/hawkandcleaver. Thanks to Kovac Cameron for theme music. Thanks to Acast for hosting the show. Thanks to the listeners. If you enjoyed the show, please consider giving us a rating and review in iTunes, and remember to hit subscribe. Thanks to the people in the Facebook group, Horror Hangout, Board of Advisors. Thanks to my co-host, Ben, for being right with you.
Thanks, Luke, as always.
Come on. I'll talk to you soon.
Bye now.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.